for calling the April 3rd Banking and Finance Financial Institutions meeting to order. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Bradford.
Here.
Bradford here. Chang. Caballero.
Here.
Caballero here. Durazo.
Here.
Durazo here. Hueso.
Here.
Hueso here. Morrell.
Here.
Morrell here. Portantino.
Members of quorum is present. We have one item before us today, but before we do that, we will adopt the committee rules. Madam Secretary, please read the rules.
Senator Bradford.
Aye.
Bradford, aye. Chang. Caballero.
Aye.
Caballero, aye. Durazo.
Aye.
Durazo, aye. Hueso.
Aye.
Hueso, aye. Morrell.
Aye.
Morrell, aye. Portantino. Five.
Okay, that measure passes. We'll leave the roll open for those absent members to add on. As stated, we have one item before us today, SB 51 by Senator Hertzberg. It's a measure that we have heard. But first, let me welcome the new members to the committee, Senator Durazo and Senator Caballero. Thank you for being here. And Senator Hertzberg, when you're ready, you may present SB 51. And welcome, Madam Treasurer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. There's a couple of changes in this bill from what it was last year, but the most significant and impactful change is that last year I had a different sponsor. Last year my sponsor was a member of the Board of Equalization. Now my sponsor is the Treasurer of the State of California in the same person, Fiona Ma. You can't improve, it's just Fiona Ma, the original. So just real quickly, particularly for the new members of the committee, here's the problem that we face that we're trying to solve. Basically, because the federal government says that marijuana is a Schedule I drug, you can't take the proceeds and put it in the bank because it's considered illegal. So now you've got a bank that's part of the federal system that deals with the clearinghouse and the like, or Federal Reserve Insurance, and it's like taking illegal drug money, so they can't do it. So we have, I don't know this for fact, just anecdotally, Mr. McGuire, who serves the northern part of the state, told me that he thinks there's $2 billion buried in barrels up in Northern California from this business. But certainly there's a lot of cash. I met a gentleman who came to my office and says he's got a tractor trailer with $40 million cash in it. You know, doesn't know what to do with it. So the question is, as a government, what do we do in our government to try to, on the one hand, take what the voters have said by a wide margin and said we want marijuana to be legal, and it's inconsistent with the federal government's role, and how do we deal with the money? How do we pay people? How do we provide safety for workers in the system? How does the government get its tax money, how, as the Treasurer will tell you, we create records and the like. So we came up with this kind of hybrid approach, which we call a limited charter bank. And in essence, what it is that you can only use it for a couple of purposes. It doesn't solve all the problems, but it solves part of the problems. And so if you look at this check, the idea is you open up a bank account. And you're a marijuana company, whatever, and you can put your money into that place. There's 982 bank branches around California that are empty, that are closed. So the idea of just renting those for new companies that want to be banks is pretty simple. It'd be pretty easy, so it's not really expensive and going to take a lot of time. The idea is that move urgently. This bill moved all the way through the legislature last time, and a number of people on this committee, including the chairman, joined on as a co-author as part of this. But the governor's office, basically, from everything I can determine internally, communicated with the other house and told them in Appropriations Committee, I was told, to hold the bill because they didn't want to deal with it. They felt that the regulatory side and some of the other issues would be too challenging. And I don't deny that they're challenging. But the flip side is we see stories of people getting killed and murdered and the like because people are carrying cash. It just creates a huge problem. So we're trying to create, until the federal government actually legalizes this stuff, a plausible interregnum, if you will, an ability to hold this in this twilight zone that works. And so the concept is, when you go to a normal bank, you know, you put your money in and they pay you this much interest down here and they lend it out here and they make their profit on interest. You can't lend money here. So the way this bank idea is a fee idea. So if you open an account, it might cost you $3,000 a month to have an account, but that's less money than it would cost you to hold the money, pay for security, deal with all the stuff. And then what we want to do to be able to put less cash in the system is that people are part of the system can use a check.
what we call a limited check. And here's an example, because what we're saying on the check is, this check is issued by this bank and depositor cash only in a limited charter bank or credit union and nobody else. So you couldn't take this bank and say, put it this check and put it in Chase or Bank of America, only your bank or another bank. So now there's four areas we've looked to. First, if you're a landlord. Landlord has three tenants. Each one's paying $25,000 a month. All of a sudden, they bring in $25,000 a month in the first of the month. Now they can write a check and take the money. Now, the landlord can do two things. One, the landlord can open an account at the bank, okay? Or two, can go take, when they have a proper ability to do it, take all the checks to the bank, cash them, and then have them or have the bank through an armored car take them to their bank. Second, I'm a plumber. I'm providing services to a bunch of these companies that do the pipelines for the plants, right? Instead of my driver have to pick up cash, I can get paid for by a check. Again, open an account. It's just management of risk and the like. Third, the idea of governments, which is the most important. We saw last year a number of budget change proposals. I met with the head of EDD, Mr. Henning, telling me how hard it is to, how long it takes to count the cash. They got to put bulletproof windows in. They got to pay the highway patrol to move the money. Now, all of a sudden, you can pay the money to your agencies, whether it's a state agency or whatever, which hopefully results in us getting more revenue to pay. And lastly, although we put this back in, the idea of to invest with the treasurer's office, if you have money in the bank and you want to get interest, well, you're only investing locally. And the other solution, so it's closed, you only can trade within yourself. And the second thing is you have to have private insurance. You can't use FDIC to insure the deals. And we've talked to some insurers that are willing to do that. So the idea is to create this limited charter bank. And then ultimately, what we did, the only other change other than that we have the treasurer now, is we added a sunset provision at the recommendation of the Banking Commission. I know the new department's called. I'm an old guy. I remember the old names. Which that was very smart they did, was a sunset provision, meaning that once the federal government decides to do this, we've got a window that these banks have to then become regularized banks. They can't be these limited charter banks, which makes perfect sense. They were only intended to be a bridge. And the last thing about it is, these are not where government's going to go and have to open a bank and stuff like that. They're private investors. And so the idea behind creating a limited charter bank was, somebody comes up and pays, let's assume it costs $5 million to start a bank. They invest in that bank. They get 300 customers, 500 customers, they got a good account. And then what's going to happen is the big entities are going to come in and buy them up. And the genius of this thing that I think that's so important, aside which the treasurer's going to talk about of keeping records, is that we didn't invent something brand new. We built this within the framework of banks. So fiduciary obligation stays the same. Board of directors obligation stays the same. Auditing provisions stay the same. Everything else, this whole body of law that's been developed, we could have written the whole thing again, but we basically incorporated by reference so that you get treated like a bank, so that then when the records and how it's being taken care of, and all of a sudden a Chase comes over and says they want to buy, say, the Caballero Dank Bank, you got $1 billion in deposits, they want to buy this, it's easy for them to buy because they understand the system because it's already banking. So the idea was create a short-term solution, do it to affect the most number of people in a way that works. If 10 different banks come together, they can have an agreement among themselves to trade checks, And then the last thing, obviously, is if somebody is a customer for marijuana, they can open up an account at your bank, put $1,000 in it, get a credit card, and then they can use it at your place, and then only electronically transfers. Again, de-risking, attorney general, public safety, less costs, easy to roll into a larger picture, better records, which the treasurer will talk about. I'll turn it over to her now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Senator Hertzberg, glad to be back here again talking about one of my favorite topics. When I was on the State Board of Equalization, I found out that we started trying to collect cannabis revenues back starting in 1996, but it was really inconsistent because there weren't a lot of folks registering, taking out their sales tax permits, understanding how to even comply. And so we spent a better of 2 years going around the state trying to advise folks who had a dispensary about their obligation to file for their sales tax permits and actually have to file either quarterly or monthly. The ones that did not, the way we would audit them is we would stand outside of the dispensary a couple days of the month, supposed to be 3 days of the month, and then count how many people went in. We would assess a dollar, average dollar amount, maybe $60 per person. We would extrapolate back 3 years, assess interest and penalties, and send them a bill, and we would hope that they would pay. Not very efficient. So it started me down this road of why don't they have banking? Very hard to audit cash businesses, as we all know. But right now, many of these businesses don't have a bank account, so they operate in all cash. They don't give us records as auditors when we go in and audit them necessarily. But the problem is the safety requirements. Many of these folks who did pay their sales taxes would come to our Board of Equalization offices with duffel bags, sometimes suitcases of cash. It wasn't safe. It wasn't efficient for our employees to be counting this high amount of cash. And now with the passage of Prop 64, it is exacerbating the situation because not only are they supposed to pay their sales taxes, but distribution tax, cultivation tax, as well as any other local taxes that may be assessed on this industry. So we think this is a great temporary solution. Went back to D.C. to testify before the Banking House Subcommittee about a month ago. Bills are starting to move a little bit, like the Perlmutter bill, but it's going to be slow going. So we definitely need a solution, temporary solution, until the banks open up their doors to this industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Amy Jenkins on behalf of the California Cannabis Industry Association and numerous individual clients who continue to be challenged by the lack of access to banking in California. The association has about 500 members, and this is generally one of the top priorities that we talk about consistently. I want to applaud the author and Treasurer Ma for continuing to advocate and work on this issue. We were pleased to join the Treasurer in D.C. When she presented testimony to the House Finance Committee on this particular issue, and we're very appreciative of the ongoing work that's being done here. Just to put it in perspective, as you know, and as the Treasurer alluded, the situation is exacerbated with the passage of 64 and all of the taxes that the compliant cannabis industry is required to pay in California. I was just speaking to a client of mine who's also a CCIA member in the audience, and they remit about $1 million in cash every month to the state. If you think about that, it translates to over 500,000 $20 bills in a year. It takes an exorbitant amount of time and energy and staff. They burn through cash counting machines, I think about six a month. And so it's a real tremendous problem. And that is coupled with all of the public safety concerns that also have been cited by the author and the state treasurer. I hear countless instances where they've been followed. There has been theft. A lot of it is largely unreported. But this is indeed a very, very significant issue for the industry, which is why we're pleased to be here today and strongly support this bill. Thank you.
This is in support. State your name and your organization.
Chair members, Ross Buckley on behalf of the City of Sacramento in support.
Alicia Priego here on behalf of Ease in support.
Priscilla Quiros on behalf of the City of Santa Monica in support.
Oh my God.
Mr. Chair and members, Tracy Stevens on behalf of NorCal Cannabis in strong support. Thank you.
Tim Moreland, Compliance Director from Origin House in strong support.
Marvin Pineda, United Cannabis Business Association, in support.
Bless Shepherd, representing the Cal Asian Chamber of Commerce, in support.
Thank you. Any additional witnesses in support? Witnesses in opposition, come forward. Seeing none, questions by the committee? Senator DeRazzo.
Trying to understand how this would work, but I totally agree that we need a mechanism, and who knows when it's going to happen at the federal government. But I'm not quite sure how this works is, so if I take my money as a cannabis business and I want to pay my landlord, as you said.
I'll gladly be a landlord.
And so I write a check out, right, from such and such credit union and give it to the landlord. Doesn't he have to, like, agree that this is a credit union and that his bank will accept it as well? Because it seems to me it's not just a matter of who we give it to, but each of the institutions that are related to that. So the landlord has his own bank and core credit union. The state has their own bank. The vendors have their own bank. So don't they all have to agree that this is an acceptable banking institution? Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Well, let's take a look at landlord Hueso over here. You know, in his 100,000 square foot building, you're paying him $100,000 a month for. And when you pay him normally, you'd bring in cash, or you'd meet him at the bank, or his representative at the bank, and you'd give the bank the cash at the bank. The state used to do that, where they literally set up a desk, you'd pay the taxes, and they turn around and hand it to the bank. So yes, landlord Hueso has to accept it. But landlord Hueso has only two options. One, if he accepts your check, right, he can go to your bank at his convenience, that at a time when he has a security guard or he hires a truck, cash that check at your bank, get the $100,000, and then put it in the armored car or the trunk of his car, however he chooses to do it, and take it to his bank and make the deposit. It's a convenience for him and his employees and safety and the like. If he doesn't want to take it, he doesn't have to take it, okay? But he can't deposit this into his bank. But what landlord Hueso will probably do is landlord Hueso, because he's got 10 customers like you and he gets $1 million a month and he doesn't want to handle much cash, he gets 10 checks. He opens those an account at Caballero Limited Charter Bank and deposits $1 million in her account, okay? Now he's got $1 million in her bank. So what does he do with that million? He can either take when he wants to, bring an armored car for management purposes, and take that million from Caballero Bank, Limited Charter Bank, and take it to Bank of America, wherever he takes it to. Or what he can do is he can say, okay, I've got a tax bill of $100,000. I'm going to pay taxes with it. Boom. I'm going to buy a state bond with it. Oh, that's $200,000. Boom. I'm going to pay some other things with it. Now I only have $600,000 less, and I'm going to transfer that. It's a convenience mechanism that's an interim deal that we're providing for people who are managing this much cash. And from the state standpoint, we're reducing our expenses because it's so expensive. They've got to cash, like when they get this money, like $1 million a month, they got to cash count like three times. It takes like three employees 2 days to count the money, and then you got to have the bulletproof stuff and everything like that. So it's a lot better, and also makes it easier for people to pay their bills. So it's not by any stretch of the imagination a perfect solution. It's a very short-term interim thing of what is a horrible situation. That I think is the best way to explain it. If that's okay, I don't know your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, we anticipate if this bill gets to the governor's desk that there will be, I don't know, 10, 20 banks around the state that would be part of this network. And just like, you know, just like you're with a network of banks, this would be also a network until the banking industry fully opens up.
Madam Vice Chair, do you have a question? Senator Morrell.
I have a question. Because, you know, federal laws were still a challenge here if they decide to do something. So you have your money in a bank, and if the federal government, is there any provisions in your bill to protect a depositor in case the feds come in and tries to seize assets, even maybe seizing the assets of another depositor in that bank? So is there provisions in that bill that guarantees and protects your guy's money?
Well, there's two
and
provisions.
By the way, how could there be provisions to protect those when it goes against federal law? That's the...
Okay, first question is, we negotiated with the controller's office, and as it relates to the state's money, we've characterized that as a trust for the state's money. So the state owns a piece of that money because of tax revenue. So what we did was we said that money, we wrote the provisions to protect the state's interests, right, and government's interests. So at least of the money that's there, let's assume it's 100,000, let's assume 20,000 of it's the state stuff, we sought to protect that it's not their money, it belongs to the state. So that's a piece. Second piece is that's what insurance is about, literally the insurance. Insurance would be expensive. I mean, in Colorado, I think, it's, you know, some people have phony bank accounts, right? They use management companies, they use their friends' credit card accounts. They try to basically jimmied around to try to figure out how to avoid the cash thing, but none of it's legal. It's really challenging. We've looked at Washington, at Colorado, at some other states that are working on these things, and it's going to be expensive. I mean, your insurance may be $2,000-$4,000 a month to hold your account, plus it could be $2,000-$3,000 a month to keep the account, so, and then it could cost you $100 a check. So you're paying, your fee could be $7,000-$8,000 a month to hold a checking account, but that's less than all the other insurances and expenses you're spending to be able to manage that cash.
And are they required to buy that insurance?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes.
And the insurance commissioner under Dave Jones started opening up, you know, different types of insurance to help these businesses.
First, let me thank you, Senator Hertzberg and Treasurer Mall, for this measure before us. But as we've heard, it's not a perfect system, far from it. And we're trying to address the need to alleviate handling cash. But at the end of the day, your depository, if it's not this institution, will still be handling cash, just as the state handles cash on a daily basis. So I just need to understand, if we can do it as a state entity, we go and deposit it, that money which we've received versus through script or cash into the state account, which will be cash, why can't individual business operators do the same? Because in essence, we're depositing the same Schedule I money that supposedly is illegal.
Good question. That was my question 5 years ago at a hearing, and I said, why does the state Board of Equalization, why are they allowed to even deposit the cash? Well, the answer is it's commingled. So it's not strictly cannabis. It could be other cash-paying businesses, and therefore we can take the cash and then deposit it in Bank of America. But if you want to deposit it in Bank of America, that is illegal.
So if I was a business operator and I had multiple businesses, why couldn't I, too, commingle my deposits?
You could go to your bank, but if your bank asks you where is the money from and you let them know, they may shut down your account, all of your accounts.
And that's what I don't understand, why they wouldn't shut down the state's account as well.
I don't want to say what I normally say about the state, but yes. And we even tried to have our state employees sit at the bank. Bank of America is our official bank, sit there with a computer that logs you in, and then we just have Bank of America teller, you know, count all the money, give us a receipt, and have someone log that in. And they said that that was not legal. We had to take the money in our own building, count it, hold it, and then deposit it to Bank of America, and that was legal. Don't ask me.
Got it. Thank you. Senator Hertzberg, would you like to close?
As they say in Yiddish, a lochenkop. So you got to have a hole in your head. I mean, it's a little crazy. It's hard. I mean, it's really hard. A lochenkop. I'll give you the dictionary. It's hard. I don't know what else to do. You know, initially, the thing that motivated me in the conversations with the treasurer is that, you know, the attorney general and the treasurer at the time wanted to do a state bank, and I figured by the time they'd figure out to work out a state bank, you know, nobody'd be smoking marijuana anymore and anywhere. I'd be crazy. It just wouldn't work. It'd take forever. This was, okay, how can you adopt an existing system as quickly as possible, get as much a dimension? I wanted it more limited in conversations with the treasurer. She came up with rent and some other ideas. I thought, what a great idea, you know, and try to manage it. I think if this thing works in the near term and we open some of these things, you'll see some people coming up with creative ideas of credit cards within the banking system and some other stuff. But right now, we wanted to keep it as limited as possible and to try to at least get some money off the street and some discipline and some record keeping in the process and some more money into the state and local coffers for all these taxes to be paid.
Great. Thank you. The bill has been moved by Senator Caballero. If there's no other further discussion, we have a due pass to Senate Governance and Finance. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Motion is due pass to Governance and Finance. Senator Bradford?
Aye.
Bradford, aye. Chang?
Aye.
Chang, aye. Caballero?
Aye.
Caballero, aye. Durazo?
Aye.
Durazo, aye. Hueso?
Aye.
Hueso, aye. Morrell?
No.
Morrell, no. Portantino? So we have one, two,
That measure's out. We'll leave the roll open for another 10 minutes for the absent members to add on. That concludes our business for today. Thank you, Senator Hertzberg. Senator Chang and Senator Morrell, would you like to vote on the committee rules? Senator Chang, on the banking rules. We only have one bill, and we have the committee rules to adopt. So, Madam Secretary, call, open the roll on committee rules.
Senator Portantino?
Aye.
Portantino, aye.
That measures out 7-0, and we have SB 51. The current vote is, what is it, 5-1?
5-1, yes.
Yes. Chair was aye.
Motion is due pass to Governance and Finance. Senator Portantino?
Aye.
Portantino, aye.
That measures out 6-1. Thank you, Mr. Portantino. That concludes our business for the day. The Senate Banking and Finance Institution is adjourned. Thank you, ladies.